First of all, Vayikach Korach. So Rashi says, Lokach es atzmo letzad echad, took himself off to one side to argue against Moshe Rabbeinu. The whole idea of Machlokes Shelo L'Shem Shamayim, which Korach is the archetype, the paradigm of Machlokes Shelo L'Shem Shamayim, so the Meiri explains, Machlokes L'Shem Shamayim means people argue together with each other for a common purpose of finding out the truth. Like Hillel and Shammai. Hillel and Shammai weren't adversaries. They were both looking for the same thing. They wanted the truth. And the way to ascertain the truth is for each person to present his side, his opinion, hear what the other one says about it, questions it, and I tries to refute it, back and forth, until together you're malabein, you clarify the issue. And then both of them get what they wanted. They both get the truth. They both get what's right. Neither wanted to be right. They just wanted to know what was right. So that's why Machlokes L'Shem Shamayim Sofa L'Hiskayin. It will be preserved because in the end both sides will get what they want, the truth. But Machlokes, and it works through Machlokes, through difference of opinion, through different things working together at this outset opposite each other, but not against each other, with each other for the same purpose. And that's what it says, that when a Rebbe and a Talmud and a father and a son learn, they become like mamish, like warriors in a war against each other. But in the end, as Vohe Basufa, the purpose is the love and unity in the end. Machlokes Shelo L'Shem Shamayim is where you argue against somebody, where the main thing is, I want to win. I want to be right. I don't care what's right. I just want to be right. Right? I don't care what the truth is. I want to come out on top. There, it's impossible for both of them to win because only one of them is going to be right in the end. So therefore, it's Ein Sofa L'Hiskayim. That is the basic difference between Machlokes. Therefore, a person has to feel like he's part of society. He's part of the klal. He contributes his part. He benefits from the part that other people contribute. And even though his part may be different than somebody else's part, I'm a Levi, you're a Kohen. I contribute the Levi part, you contribute the Kohen part. I don't have to be a Kohen, you don't have to be a Levi. We benefit from each other and contribute to each other. Okay. And that was what Korach's problem was. He should have striven to be the greatest Levi he could have been, but not to be a Kohen. The Kohen wasn't for him. Somebody else is a Kohen. He doesn't have to be a Kohen. In fact, the Shem Mishmuel says that had Korach not sinned, had he fulfilled his tafkid in this world, there would have been a position created that could have been created only for Korach. It would have been then continued on for generations. But it never materialized because it had to start with someone of the stature of Korach, and he ruined everything. He would have been Levi Gadol. There would have been, just like there's a Kohen Gadol, there would have been a Levi Gadol. And Korach would have been the Levi Gadol. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu, when he told the Leviim that it's not enough what the Ribbono Shel Olam gave to you, Levius, Uvikashtem Gam Kehuna, you want to be Kohanim too? And he said to them, Rav Lachem B'nei Levi, enough for you. So the Ribbono Shel Olam said, the same way you told them, I'm going to tell you. Just like you told them, Rav Lachem B'nei Levi, later on I'm going to say the same thing to you, Rav Lach, enough for you. You don't have to go into Eretz Yisrael, enough for you. Seems like Moshe is being punished, that he did something wrong. That, well, why did you tell the Leviim, Rav Lachem B'nei Levi, so I'm going to give it back to you and say the same words to you when the time comes to punish you. But what did he say wrong? He was 100% right in what he said to Shevet Levi. Now the idea is it could have been misunderstood. What Moshe Rabbeinu said, Rav Lachem B'nei Levi, could have been misunderstood to mean that you shouldn't strive to be more than you are. You're believing, what do you have to strive to be a Kohen for? You don't need more. Be happy with what you have. That's not true in Ruchnius. person has to always strive for more and more and more. There's only one condition. You strive to be the greatest you can be within the framework HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you, but not somebody else's framework. So you, B'nai Levi, you should strive to be the greatest Leviim you can be. And if you do, maybe you'll be a Levi Gadol. But don't strive to be a Kohen. That's not your framework. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, since what you said could be misunderstood, and people could learn from that, that in Ruchnius you shouldn't strive for more. You should be happy with what you got. I'm going to make it clear what you meant. When the time comes that you can't go into Eretz Yisrael, and I'm going to use the same exact terminology, Rav Loch, no one would ever think that I meant, Moshe, you have enough, don't strive for more. But just that, Moshe, for whatever reason, this is not your framework. You are not supposed to go into Eretz Yisrael. That's out of limits for you. So the Rav Loch means this is out of your framework. That's what you meant to say to the Leviim. You didn't mean to say to the Leviim, don't strive for more. Just don't strive for something out of your framework. And I'm going to make it clear that that's what you meant, because later on, when it comes to telling you that this is your framework, I'm going to use the same terminology so people understand. But that is the idea. The idea is that if you're part of society and you understand that shlemus, like we spoke about a few weeks ago, perfection in this world, except by God, nothing's perfect. The Rabban Shem created many things. Each thing contributes its unique part towards the whole. And it's only when many things, and sometimes even conflicting things, work together that there's perfection. So a person has to be part of the cloud. He can't be off to the side by his own, and every man for himself, and everybody has to do everything for himself. That's what Korach said. It's not enough one Kohen Gadol. Everybody can be Kohen Gadol. But it's not necessary. There only has to be one Kohen Gadol. And there has to be a Levi, and there has to be a Yisrael, and there has to be men, and there has to be women. Not everybody duplicates everybody else's role, because everybody has a specific role to play in the totality and the perfection of the scheme of things. So Korach's chait started when Lokach es atzmo letzad echad. He took himself off to one side. With that, you can understand another part of the Sedra. That's what Machlokis, this essence of Machlokis is. What was Korach's taina? Kol ha'eda kulam kedoshim uvesocham Hashem umadua tisnasu al kahal Hashem. The whole Eda are holy, and God is in the midst of them, right? And why are you making yourselves great? Who needs leaders? Right? Korach made a mistake to think that the purpose of leaders was twofold. There are two kinds of tzibur. Really, there are three, but right now we'll talk about two. There's the kahal and the eda. We've spoken about this in the past in different contexts, but the kahal is the fact that people need to be unified together, have one, have something that unifies them and makes them be cohesive at work as a tzibur, not as just a bunch of yechidim. That's a kahal. Kahal means a congregation. Literally, people congregate together. Vayikohalu ha-Yehudim. They gather together, they congregated together. That's a kahal. An Eda doesn't have to be where people are mamish together physically. The Eda is they have common purpose. They could be scattered over the whole world. But what unites them is their common purpose. Eda comes either from Edus, they all testify towards the same principles. Or Eda comes from Ya'ad. They all have the same destination. They're all going the same place. They have the same goals, purposes, or whatever. That's what unites them. That's an Eda. So Korach said like this. So what's the purpose of a leader? Purpose of a leader is either to unite the Kahal or to give the Eda commonality of purpose. Okay? So, if kol ha'eda kulam kedoshim, that's only, when do you need to give people common purpose if they're not all kodesh? So then you need to inspire them to be kodesh. That's the function of a Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol is a spiritual leader. He's an ish kodesh. Once a year he goes into the kodesh hakodoshim. He is supposed to inspire the Jewish people towards that one common goal of Kedusha. But Kol Ha'eda, Kulam Kedusha. The whole Eda are Kodesh. They already have that perspective. They are all holy. So you don't need a Kohen Gadol. Uvesolchem Hashem. Also, God is amongst them, so he gives them something to rally around. God's Mishkan, right, is a central focal point, so all the Jews can rally and congregate around the Mishkan, around the presence of the Rabbanu Shalom. So, Uvesolchem Hashem, if Vesolchem Hashem, Madua Tisnasu Akahal Hashem. What do we need a Melech? A Melech unites the people physically. Puts them into one social structure. A Kohen Gadol unites them spiritually, gives them common purpose. But if him kol ha'eda kulam kedoshim, ubesochem Hashem, madua tisnasu al kahal Hashem. You don't need for the Eda, you don't need for the kahal. That's what you need leaders for. Why do we need a Kohen Gadol? Why do we need a melech? The answer is, there's another function of a leader. The other function of the leader is the third function of the tzibur. The Tzibur is also Yisrael. Yisrael, we said, is Yesh Shishim Ribu Yosios Latori. Yisrael means, aside from the fact that everybody has to be united physically and spiritually, they also have to be united in such a way that they contribute their unique part towards the whole. For that, you need an orchestra leader. In other words, the whole orchestra may know how to play their instruments. And the whole orchestra may be here. So you don't need somebody to congregate them and unite them, because they're all here. You don't need somebody to teach them how to play their instrument, because they all know how to play. So what do you need an orchestra leader for? You need them to coordinate all the different instruments. Everybody knows how to play, and everybody's here. But you need one person to take all the different instruments, and all the different sounds, and all the different times, and whatever, and put them together into a symphony. That's the third purpose of a leader. You need a leader not just to unite people physically and spiritually, even if they're united physically and spiritually, you still need a leader. You need a leader to deal with all the differences and coordinate them. That's what Korach didn't understand. Korach understood that, you know, it's nice to be united or whatever, but everybody, actually each man for himself. Everybody does it for himself and doesn't benefit from somebody else or benefit somebody else. Everybody has to be a Kohen Gadol. Everybody has to be a, right? But he missed this point that everybody has to contribute his unique part towards the whole and can't do everybody's unique part, just his. And benefits from everybody else's. So that is what's it called, the taina. That's represented by Talis Shekulo Techeles and Bayis Molei Sforim. Korach came with a taina. If you have a Talis that's all Techeles, do you need tzitzis? If you have a house that's full of svarim, do you need what's it called, a mezuzah? Now, why did he assume that you don't? The halach is obviously you do, right? So why did he assume not? So that was his mistake, they say, right? That you don't need that one mezuzah, the leader. If everybody is full of svarim and everybody is treles, then you don't need that one seal. But no, you do need a leader. But I want to say no. There was such a thing as a bayis molei svarim that didn't have a mezuzah. And there was a Talis, Shekulo Treles, it didn't have tzitzis. What was that? The Me'il. The Me'il that the Kohen Gadol wore was a Talis, Shekulo Treles, and didn't have tzitzis on it. And the Kodesh HaKadoshim had nothing in it except the Aron. And what did the Aron have in it? The Luchos and the Sefer Torah. It was a bias mole svarim. There was nothing else in it. And didn't have a mezuzah on the door. So Korach assumed that the Me'il doesn't need tzitzis. That means if you're Kulo Treles, your kol ha'eda kulam kedoshim, you don't need that leader. And if the kahal is all united, right, you don't need the mole svarim, right, that unite them, then you don't need the mezuzah. The answer is, you still need the tcheles. Enochanami, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, for the Kohen Gadol himself, right, doesn't need the tzitzis on the me'il. In the Kodesh HaKadoshim we don't need, but in a regular situation, out there, right, every person needs a coordinator to let him know his unique part. The Kohen Gadol unites everybody, The Kodesh HaKadoshim is beyond time and space. It unites everything. So there you don't need it. But when you have all different kinds of things working together out in the outer world, there, Taki, you need the tzitzis and you need the mezuzah. That was Korah's mistake. Now let's take it one step further. Another step further is the following. That, what was Korach's punishment? Oh, so first of all, one thing on Medrash, that they try to bring a proof from this Medrash, but they think that according to what we're saying now, there's no proof at all. The Medrash says like this, Moshe Rabbeinu davened to the Ribbono Shel Olam not to accept the portion of Korach and his cohorts that they have in the daily sacrifice. Don't let their portion be burnt, so the Korban HaTamid shouldn't be mechaber for them. But that's absurd. Right? Because if that was true, then you couldn't have a public sacrifice. You couldn't have a communal sacrifice. Why? Because a communal sacrifice is a chatas, right? An ola, right? But there's chatos also. There are sin offerings that are tzibur, sin offerings that are burden, yomim tovim, musaf, whatever. The halacha is that chatas shemesu ba'aleha is possible. A chatas, that the owner of the chatas died, the whole chatas is possible. So if a carbon tzibur is a partnership between all of the tzibur, everybody has a share in it, right? And somebody dies, when people die all the time, every day, then the carbon's possible. Because one of the owners died. And what do you have to say? That a carbon tzibur is not a carbon that's owned by many owners, but it's a carbon that's owned by the tzibur. It's similar to the idea of a corporation. If I have a share in a corporation, I don't own basically a direct share in the inventory of the company, right? If I own stock in Yesh, okay, so let's say I own let's say I have a lot of stock, I own 1% of the company. Okay? I own 1/100th of the stock of Yesh. Okay. I can't walk into Yesh, right, and take out 1% of the stuff off the shelves and say, I'm not paying for this because this is my share. Right? Or I can't go to the cashier and say, just charge me 99% because I own 1% of this company. I don't own anything in the stock. I own a share in the company, and through the company, I have rights in the stock, but I don't own any of the stock. I have a share in the company, but not a share in the thing itself. That says tremendous hashlachos legabi chometz. Right? If I own stock in a goyish company that doesn't sell their chometz, okay? And Pesach comes, do I have to sell my stock? According to many, I don't have to sell it. Because of my stock, I don't own chametz. I own a share in the company. The company happens to own chametz, but I don't own that chametz personally. I just have a connection to the company. The corporation happens to own, the corporation is a fictitious entity to itself. Not everybody holds to that when it comes to corporations. That's how it works. But that's what a tzibur is. A tzibur, I'll give you another example, a Gemara. The Gemara says, if I made a nether, okay, not to have enjoyment from any of you people, or any one of you, okay, and you are all partners in some kind of tzimmer, I can't go into that tzimmer, because I'm enjoying your portion of that tzimmer. But if you, what's it called, all own together a shul, or something of the tzibur, you own a reservoir of water for Ole Regalim. I'm allowed to drink from it. Why? Because you don't have a personal part in that. It's owned by the tzibur. I happen to be a part of the tzibur. I have rights to it. But I don't own the water, and you don't own the water. You're part of the tzibur. The tzibur owns it. It's not owned by the individuals who make up the tzibur. The tzibur is an entity to itself. So if that's the case, then there's no problem with a korban tzibur. Right? You bring a korban chatas tzibur, and one of the people died who was there when they separated the korban. He doesn't own a part in that korban. He just happens to be part of the tzibur. And that's why there's halacha of ein misa b'tzibur. The tzibur can't die. Because the tzibur is not made up of individuals. The tzibur is an entity to itself that happens to change constantly of which individuals are part of that tzibur. But the tzibur is an entity to itself. Just like a corporation can change shareholders, but the corporation remains constant. So therefore, what is Moshe Rabbeinu saying? Don't burn their part in the Korban HaTamid, right? So they don't get the... They don't have a part, because if they had a part, there couldn't be a Korban Tzibur, especially not a Chatos. The answer is what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying the following. If Korach's philosophy is true, that it's every man for himself, and there is no such thing as a cohesive Tzibur. They're an idea of individuals who may band together to do things together, but there's no concept of a tzibur, right? There's no concept of Israel. There's a kahal, there's an eda, but there's no cohesive tzibur that transcends the individuals. Then, according to Korach, everybody has a share in the korban atomic, right? There's no such thing as a korban tzibur. There's a korban of shutfim, partners, but not a tzibur. So then don't burn his part. Manavshach, right? If his philosophy is wrong, he deserves to be part. If it's right, then I'm asking you not to burn his part. Similar to that is the punishment he got. What was Korach's punishment? That the earth opened up and swallowed him up alive. So it's a nice pshat that somebody says. Why is that his punishment? Because Korach tried to put himself above everybody else. He didn't want to be part of the tzibur. He wanted to be above everybody else. So there's two ways, and even against Moshe Rabbeinu, Kis historer, leinu gam historer, they said. Right? Who are you to make yourself bigger than us? Now, Moshe Rabbeinu was the lowest of the low. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu was onav mikol ha'adam asher al pneihu adama. He was on ground level. So if you accuse Moshe Rabbeinu of being above you, the only way he could be above you is if you're beneath ground level. So fine, you consider Moshe Rabbeinu historer, fine, so we'll put you in your place. Right? You consider Moshe Rabbeinu above you, he's making himself above you. Moshe Rabbeinu is the lowest of the low. He's on ground level, so you have to go beneath ground level to make what you said true. It's cute for it. I think of a different idea. Why the earth swallowed him up. Another simple idea is, it says, if there's no, have him spalled b'shloma shel malchus, davin for the welfare of the government. Because a government creates a tzibur, right? That's what a government does. It creates a functioning society. Because if there is no functioning government, there's anarchy and ishes re'eyu chayim below. They swallow each other alive. That's what happened to Korach. He got swallowed up alive. Because he created a situation where there's anarchy. Where there's no authority. Each man for himself. Every man for himself is ishes re'eyu chayim below. Now I'll tell you my pshat. My pshat, I think, is the following. And that is that if God said like this, let's take Korach's philosophy, every man for himself, and there's no cohesive society that's an entity to itself where everybody contributes their part for the common good and everybody benefits from everybody else's part for the common good. It doesn't exist. But the philosophy is every man for himself. Okay. Let's put that into nature. L'chora, how do you stand on the ground? Especially in the desert, right? You have all this sand. Every bit of sand is just a little grain. How does that grain support the weight of a person standing on it? Right? The answer is, there's a cohesion between the grains that make them stick together. Certain cohesion. Even though there's not mud or whatever, but whatever it may be, I don't know how it works, but in any case, there's a cohesion between the grains. When something disturbs that cohesion, you get quicksand. That's what quicksand. Quicksand is where there's no cohesion between the grains, either because there's a lot of water or whatever, and you walk into this mire and there's nothing to support you. You sink into it, and if nothing stops you, that's the end. So the Rosh Hashanah said like this, Korach, you have the philosophy that every man for himself, that there's no cohesion between people. So let's put your philosophy into nature. If that's the case, there's no cohesion between the grains of sand. Therefore, you have no place to stand. Because you stand on the earth, you're going to fall right through. It's going to swallow you up alive. You're going to be swallowed up like quicksand. That's what happened. So we'll put your philosophy into the ground underneath you, and you're not going to have a place to stand. You're going to go right through the earth. So your philosophy can't exist within nature. the philosophy of every man for himself can't exist. There is a cohesion between people, just like there's a cohesion between grains of sand. Okay. I think it's a cute idea, but
there's not the one grain of sand that
what?
There's not the one grain of sand that coordinates it.
That is?
There's not the one grain
of sand
that coordinates.
Okay. Okay. That no, there is a coordinator. It's called God. Okay. With that, we can also understand another thing in this Sedra, and that is the Sedra points out the importance of women. Because it would seem on the surface, perhaps, that women are, shortchanged, discriminated against. Okay, and there are women that feel like that. You know, that God, gave them a dirty deal. Right. On the one hand, they don't have the opportunity to wear tzitzis and wear tefillin and get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and be part of a minyan. I know a lot of men who would be very happy to switch with that. But in any case, but there are women who, and I can't be the chazan and the balkore and get an aliyah, and it's not fair. Okay. And there are a lot of things that are worse than that. Those things, at least, you could pretend you could change. Women could wear talisim and put on tefillin and sing their kishkas out by the coastal Maravi on Rosh Chodesh and, get aliyahs or whatever. And you can pretend that, you can do whatever you want. Okay. But there are certain things that God put in the world, differences between men and women, that there's nothing you can do about it. The greatest feminist can't do anything about it except complain. I tell my seminary students, I said, if you think it's not fair that you can't be the Balkore, and you can't be the Shliach Tzibor, and you can't put on tefillin, and you can't wear tzitzis, I'll tell you what's really not fair. I said, when I got married, I am a very fair-minded person. And I told my wife, in the spirit of fairness and equality, I accept to get pregnant half the time, and you get pregnant half the time. Okay? We will share this equally. It never worked out. Every single time we had children, she's the one who got pregnant. She had to go through 9 months of pregnancy, right? With all the morning sickness, with all the aches and pains. Then she had to give birth. And what did I do? Right? Gave up mazel tovs, prepared a Dvar Torah for the bris or for the kiddush, right? Really difficult. Today, already, they've made it more fair because they have lamaz. That means that a father breathes together with his wife, so now it's equal, right? Since the father is there and he's breathing deeply as his wife is going through all this pain, so now he can fool himself into thinking that, well, now, Baruch Hashem, we've made it equal because I'm also breathing deeply, right? Which is a little absurd because I think that a woman would like to breathe deeply too and not go through all the pains of childbirth. But Lamaisa, that's the way the Rabban Shem made the world. You can't say that it's culturally induced. It used to be that men gave birth to children. But some, men came along and they induced women now to have children and men stopped having children. Just like they say that that's why women aren't truck drivers and women play with dolls, because it's culturally induced. So this you can't say it's culturally induced. That's the way the Rabban Shem made the world. He made men and women different. So if you don't understand this scheme, that everybody contributes their part, and you don't have to duplicate somebody else's part, and you benefit from all the things that everybody else contributes, and they benefit from what you contribute, then nobody's shortchanged. Just the opposite. Here the Torah says a woman's role is more of a supportive role, but not supportive. A woman's role is to create and influence the male role. Okay? That's why it says she's an Ezer Kenegdo. She is a help, but she's also against him. Meaning, where he deserves it, she helps him. Where he doesn't deserve it, she's against him. Meaning not that when he's bad and he doesn't deserve it, then he has a wife that goes against him. No, what it means is, when a man wants to do what's right, his wife helps him do what's right. When he wants to do what's wrong, she goes against him to help him do what's right by opposing him doing wrong. She's always helping him do what's right. Either by doing the right thing together with him, or encouraging him, or discouraging him from doing what's wrong. That's what it means. And therefore, it says, Isha Kshera, a fit wife, Osa Ritzon Baila. So it's usually translated, she fulfills the will of her husband. Which means, it sounds like a woman, you know, she just do whatever her husband wants, she should be a docile, you know, servant of her husband. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say, Isha Kshera Mikayen Ratzon Baila. She fulfills. Osa, she makes her husband's will, meaning she's the one who influences him to have the right kind of will. She's the one who stands behind him and encourages him to want what's right and not to want what's wrong. She's Osa Ratzon Baila. She makes, she creates his will. And in this week's Sedra, we see that that is a, it's a pivotal role. So pivotal that the Gemara says that a woman's influence is so strong that in this world, really, everything depends on the women. The Medrash gives a maisa that happened. There was a tzaddik and a tzidkonis, tzaddikis, if you like to call it, right, who were married. And they got divorced. The tzaddik married a rishita, and the tzidkonis married a Russian. Says the Medrash, the tzidkonis made her husband the Russian into a tzaddik. And the Rishita made her husband, the Tzaddik, into a Russian. And the Medrash says, in case you didn't get the message, Hakol Toli B'Isha. Everything depends on the woman. Because the woman has a pivotal role of being the inspirer, the one who influences in Klal Yisrael. She may not do all these things, but she's the one who inspires it. She has a tremendous influence. Women have a tremendous influence over men. And therefore, in the machlokas of Korach, it was the women who basically either made it or broke it. Why did Korach argue against Moshe Rabbeinu, says the Medrash? Really, it was his wife's fault. Korach came home, and he said, today really had an interesting thing happen to us. Moshe Rabbeinu shaved us from head to toe, and he picked us up, all of us, like a lulav. Right, Aaron picked us up like a lulav and shook us to all six directions. We really felt like, you know, like idiots. But that's what happened. So Korach's wife said, he's trying to make you look like fools. You're right. He said, no, they did it to him too. He's a Levi. He said, yeah, he's willing to suffer looking like a fool so you could look like a fool. She raged him on. That's sometimes, I mean, in a kehila, it's for sure like that. Right? It's sometimes the women that are the worst. If the women have an uprising to make a machlokas in the community, then you're lost. If you get the women on your side, right, they can stop the men from going crazy. And it's true even in a personal way. It says that a man should not come home and tell his wife everything that happened to him during the day, especially if it's little spats that are insignificant. Shouldn't come home and say, this one called me an idiot, and this one, yelled at me, and whatever. Why? Because a man will forget about it. It's like kids, right? Men are like children, right? If I have to say so myself. So, a kid, you know, you don't do this with your kids either. Kids go home, hey, what's his name, hit me, or what's he took away my things. So some parents immediately go out, right, and start getting involved in their kids' fights, right? And that is, when you do that, it's the end. It's the end for the kid, it's the end for the parents, it's the end for the kehila, right? It never ends, and it's, what happens? Kids are kids. The kid today fought, tomorrow they'll be playing again, they'll forget about it. But once a parent gets involved, the parents don't forget. And they don't realize the situation. So men are like children. They get into problems, and this one called me an idiot, and this one did this to me, this one that. By tomorrow, he has to go back to work, and he forgets about what happened the day before. It's not that important to him, and he can get along. But he goes home, tells his wife, and she cares for the honor of her husband more than he does. She wasn't there to see all the differences that he knows that maybe he deserved to be called an idiot a little bit too, right? And it was a little bit his fault too. She champions her husband's covet and makes a mountain out of a molehill, and doesn't stop. So one thing is, don't tell your wife all the little things that happen, because by tomorrow it won't be important to you, and it's going to be important to her forever, and she's going to make a big deal of it. Secondly, right, even if she doesn't champion your honor, if every day you come home and say, this one said I'm an idiot, tomorrow that one said I'm an idiot, you know what the wife's going to think? You know, everybody can't be wrong, right? I'm getting a message over here, a pattern. The guy's an idiot. Right? Every day somebody else calls him an idiot. So it's not in the best interest of a husband to tell his wife every narishkeit that happens and get her upset. So Korach came home, told his wife these things. She raged him on, and that's not a machlokas because of these women. On the other hand, Om ben Peles had a wife who saved his life. Om ben Peles came home and he said, wow, it's really, what's it called, things are really going. We're having this argument with Moshe Rabbeinu, and I'm on Korach's side, and you know, we're really gonna get him. So Om ben Peles' wife said, what does Korach want? She said, he wants to be Kohen Gadol. She says, you idiot. What's it called? If Korach wins, he becomes Kohen Gadol, and you remain Om ben Peles. If Aaron wins, he becomes Kohen Gadol, and you remain Om ben Peles. What are you getting involved in this? You have nothing to gain from this. Stay home. I don't want you to get involved in this. She said, nah, they're my friends. I promised. She said, we'll see. She got him drunk, put him to sleep. And then to make sure, and they came to get him, right? You know, they came to get their friend. You know, we're going now to give it to Moshe Rabbeinu. So they went, uncovered their hair, sat on, what's it called, not modestly, in front of the house. And Korach's a frum guy, you know, he's not going to come and look at women who aren't dressed modestly. So they came to the porch and they went right away, right? I mean, Korach, besides being an arch enemy of Moshe Rabbeinu and of Torah, but he was frum, right? So, you know, he's not going to do something wrong, right? Except argue against Moshe Rabbeinu and the Torah gets swallowed up by that. But otherwise, he's a frum guy. So Lemaisa, they went away. So she saved her husband. Then all of a sudden the earth opens up and everybody starts to roll from Korach's, anybody who's involved starts to roll towards the vortex, towards the opening in the ground. There's an earthquake and Om ben Peles falls off the bed and starts to roll out the door. His wife stands in the doorway and she says, Rabban Lishon, this isn't fair. I put the guy to sleep. I made sure he didn't go. Okay, it wasn't his choice, but this is the reward I get, that my husband now is going to go get swallowed up by the earth, and I did everything in my power to stop him from being part of the machlokas, and the mice stopped rolling. She saved her husband. So Om ben Peles saved her husband, and Korach's wife destroyed her husband. So the Gemara says from that, we see the pasuk in Mishlei, Chochmas Isha Bonsa Besa, the wisdom of a woman builds her home, and Iveles, and a foolish woman, Biyodeha Tarsena, she destroys her home with her own hands. So in the parsha where we learn of how people have to interact, everybody has their role to play, that's where the Torah tells us the importance of the role of women, even though it may seem that they're not doing everything men are doing. But their contribution may be even more important as the one who instigates and inspires and influences what's supposed to be done.